The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Before I get into this, I knew Malcolm wasn't like other kids. I even suspected he wasn't mine right from the start. Helen, his mother, and I had been friends since high school. Back then, we traveled in very different circles, so I never confessed my feelings to her. It was enough at the time that someone of her popularity maintained our friendship, even when her peers would ridicule her for taking pity on the dorky kid. I asked her why that was the case one time, why she would spend time away from her fellow cheerleaders with the anime nerd.
"You're the only one who can make me laugh," she said with a shrug.
As I'm sure my fellow introverts can relate to, that was when I first allowed myself to believe I had a chance at something beyond friendship with her. Ultimately, I would never test those waters, as I didn't want to scare off one of my only friends, but that didn't stop my simple crush from blossoming into something I wasn't ready to assign a title to. After school, we went our separate ways, eventually drifting apart completely. I would beat myself up about not taking the risk as the years progressed, even more so when I would revisit some of the old Polaroids we took back then, but it became nothing more than a passing whimsy as I grew. Relationships would come and go over the years, but rarely lasted for long. More often than not, I was almost glad when they ended, as I was still not a fan of being around many people. If nothing else, these experiences did pull me out of my shell, at least to a point. I barely recognized Helen when I saw her from a distance in a local bookstore, a good decade after school. She hadn't changed much physically. If anything, she was even more striking than she was back then, but the way she carried herself was very different. Helen was always confident, something that was evident, even from a distance. The woman I saw that day was far more reserved, keeping her head tilted while nervously darting her eyes around the place. Those bright blue eyes and wavy scarlet hair looked just the same as I remembered, though. I almost felt like a peeping Tom with the way I was just glaring at her from the other side of the store, whipping my head to the side when she turned to face me. When I allowed my gaze to meet hers again, though, she was already practically sprinting right at me. From that moment on, we became a significant part of each other's lives again. She was far more timid and withdrawn than she used to be, but she would not confess the reason for that until some time later. Yes, we talked almost every day, even if it was nothing more than some back-and-forth text messages, but she would rarely talk about life since high school. It was close to a year after our reuniting that she finally let me in on the secret she kept from the world, the one that I alone would be permitted to hear. By this point, we had been in a relationship for a few months, something my younger self could have only dreamt of, which I did more times than I can count. Though we had yet to speak those three little words that had been lingering on the tip of my tongue for over a decade, I felt secure in the idea that she may truly feel the same. When she told me we needed to talk that night, I honestly feared the worst, as that phrase often meant a relationship may indeed be suffering from a terminal illness.
"I love you, Aiden. You know that, right?"
she said, causing my heart to practically leap into my throat.
"I love you too,"
I replied, my whole body trembling with excitement.
"I've loved you since..."
"I know," she said, cutting me off mid-sentence.
"I always knew. I guess I didn't realize back then, you know, that I did too."
We just gazed at each other, while my head spun from the sheer magnitude of emotions attacking at the time. As I moved closer, taking these words as my cue to wrap my arms around her and never let go, she gently placed a hand on my pounding chest, a strangely weary half-smile on her face.
"There are things you need to know before we take this any further. Things that may be tough to hear."
What she told me that night not only secured in my mind that I would move heaven and earth to keep her safe, but it almost brought my rapidly beating heartbeat to a standstill. She didn't look me in the eye throughout the entirety of her story, only kept her gaze fixed on her fingers as she fidgeted with the blanket. As for me, I couldn't even hope to turn my eyes away as she spoke, nor could I hold back the tears, regardless of how hard I tried. The beginning of her tale concerned little more than her party years in college. While I wasn't exactly a social butterfly, I too spent my fair share of nights passed out on a friend's couch after an all-night bender, so this was nothing I couldn't relate to. Why she felt the need to mention the variety of sexual partners she enjoyed over that time, though, I could have done without that chunk of voluntary information. She continued to be somewhat promiscuous after college, though not to the degree she was back then. She dated a good deal, never feeling the urge to settle down, but she was young and enjoying life. Who could blame her? It was some 6 years after high school when one of her many suitors would change her outlook forever.
"He creeped me out, right from the start," she said. Her moistened eyes glistened in the soft light of my living room. "Something about those large, dark eyes felt like they were gazing right into my soul. I swear they didn't look like that when we met a few days before that night, but he didn't even seem like the same person I bumped into in the grocery store."
As she told it, she had been reaching for an item on a higher shelf when this random stranger lent her a hand, swooping in like the valiant knight. She and the man, who introduced himself as Jackson Pack, spent the remainder of her trip around the shop talking, with him coming off as nothing short of charming and witty. She had been looking forward to the dinner they had arranged for that coming Saturday, but she could tell right away that there was something very different about him when he arrived that night. While he was still the same tall, handsome, and well-built man who had made her shopping experience so much more enjoyable, it wasn't only his more haunting gaze that sent a chill the length of her spine.
"The way he talked, his mannerisms, even his facial expressions weren't the same. I knew he was the same guy, not some crazy, evil twin setup, but at the same time, he wasn't."
Only 20 minutes or so into the uncomfortable conversation, she made up a quick excuse to leave. While her date appeared only casually annoyed by this, he didn't prevent her from heading to the door. As she headed back to her home, still feeling uneasy and a little guilty for her actions, she felt safe in the knowledge that this was the right choice. When she reached her apartment to see the man she had left back at the restaurant leaning up against her door, however, she almost hit the floor from the head rush.
"He just smiled at me, but the look on his face wasn't the slightest bit friendly. He didn't speak, nor did he give me a chance to, not that I could even think of what to say. When he reached down and nonchalantly opened the door, tilting his head to usher me inside, somehow, I just knew, you know. I knew that if I didn't do what he wanted, I was going to die in that hallway."
I will not get into the details of what happens next, only moments after he sealed the entrance to her apartment behind them. She lost consciousness sometime throughout the son-of-a-bitch violating her, but she would consider this to be a blessing, given the mess she was in when she awoke. The ambulance she called carried her to the emergency room, where the doctors did everything they could for her, but not until she had spoken to the police about the attack. Ultimately, it didn't take them long to track down Peck, who claims to have no recollection of even making it to the restaurant, let alone stalking and brutally sexually assaulting the woman he met in the grocery store. When Helen picked him out of the lineup a few days after she was released from the hospital, he seemed nothing more frightening than an attractive and timidly terrified man.
"In a strange way," she said, "I almost felt bad for him, you know. I don't know if it was just because of where he was and what he was facing, but nothing was intimidating about him anymore. He just looked like a frightened little boy, like he was about to break down crying any second."
We talked a good deal more after that, mostly about her recovery, therapy, and adjusting back to regular life after such a trying ordeal. We both cried as I tried my best to console her, but I felt my own heart being torn to ribbons as she spoke. When her story came to a close, we just sat in silence, holding one another. I couldn't tell which one of us was trembling more, I both ached for what she'd been through and wanted little more than to break into the prison to beat her attacker within an inch of his life, leaving him in a pool of his own blood, as he had done to her. After a time, Helen got to her feet, holding out her hands for me to grasp in mine. She led me to the bedroom, gesturing for me to sit on the bed. Though we had already been intimate a number of times, that was the furthest thing from my mind at that moment. Not only was my heart still wincing from her story, but I was quite frankly not in that sort of mood, all things considered. Each time we'd spent the night together over those past months, she had kept herself covered from the waist up, insisting that the light remain turned off. I never asked questions about this, as I was just thrilled to be enjoying the company of the woman I had adored for years. I was both shy and introverted, so I wasn't the most comfortable with my pasty flesh being seen under even the most flattering of illumination, so I was almost grateful for her requests. That night, though, after telling me the story that still haunts me to this day, she would reveal everything about her provisions. For the briefest moments, I could almost feel my mouth watering with anticipation as she slowly slipped out of her skirt, her fingers gently caressing the base of her shirt right after. As the silky fabric stroked her pale skin as she pulled it up, I felt my lips separate and my eyes unable to contain the tears. The scars left in the wake of the numerous symbols cut into her flesh were of no language I could recognize, though potential translations did not remotely register at the time. From her navel to her sternum, these bizarrely intricate designs traveled in a spiral around her torso. Each one looked as small as the typewritten text in a magazine, but there were so many, she could have had an entire novel etched into her skin. In many ways, so much as I hate to say it, there was something of a beauty to them, though even the raunchiest of poems could be quite graceful when written on a gorgeous canvas. As we stared at one another, Helen's eyes drooped, her shoulders sank, and her posture seemed deflated. I rose from the bed to embrace her far more passionately than I ever had before, or likely would again. Before I knew it, we were laying on the bed, the love of my life shedding tears upon my chest. We drifted off in each other's arms, a tradition we would continue many nights for years to come. As time passed, Helen grew comfortable in the fact that she was absolutely stunning, regardless of the marks she confessed she was afraid to reveal to me. Oddly, even given the circumstances of how she ended up with them, I grew to love looking upon the intricate text upon her flesh, just as much as gazing into her glorious eyes. It was maybe 2 years after we married, 3 since our rekindling when the pregnancy test came up positive. Though we hadn't been trying to conceive, we were both thrilled about becoming parents. Our life together had been nothing short of blissful, and the thought of bringing a new member into our little family felt more right than anything I had ever known. Helen was a little less than 3 months along, according to the doctor, and we were both relieved to hear that everything looked to be coming along smoothly. My wife had been dealing with Dr. Sarah McPherson since before her attack, so she had the utmost trust in her. Not only that, but given their history, she wouldn't have to worry about explaining her unusual scarring. As the doctor predicted, everything continued to go as well as it could over the following months, aside from the morning sickness, cramps, and other pregnancy-related ailments. My love and adoration for my beloved only increased throughout that time, even when holding her hair back from the gaping maw of the porcelain god. During a snowy mid-November night, some 6 months after learning we were to be parents, Helen awoke me in the wee hours of the morning.
"I think he's coming," she said through a panting breath.
Like any other proud father-to-be, my eyes sprang to awareness with the inherent panic setting in quickly. Within 10 minutes, we were gunning it to the hospital, with Dr. McPherson en route to meet us there. I felt my pulse throbbing at a far more rapid pace than the tires of my family-ready SUV, but I was doing my best to play the part of a calm and adoring husband, an act that was likely completely unbelievable to someone who knew me better than myself. After 13 grueling hours of labor, our beautiful baby boy was brought into this world with not so much as a sound. No tears, no whimpers, only silence. I felt my heart screech to a halt as the fear took hold of it. But when he just gazed up at his mother, uttering a soft, cooing sound, the blood finally rushed back to my trembling limbs.
"Well, hi there, Malcolm,"
Helen said, with tears trickling down her face. Though we had discussed potential names over those past months, Malcolm had never entered the first conversation. I remembered my mother telling me that I was originally planned to be David Alan Morse before she looked into my eyes to see Aiden...
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Jacoby gazing up at her. I couldn't even begin to imagine what such an experience is like for a mother, regardless of my own moistened cheeks dripping salt water onto my shirt. All I knew at the time was that my swelling heart could barely contain the flood of emotions attacking me at once. That was until my beautiful, glowing wife let out a shriek that almost caused my quivering legs to drop me to the floor. Within seconds, McPherson swipes the baby from her arms, passing quickly to a nurse, while Helen practically clawed at her midsection.
"You can't be here," the doc said, not so much as looking at me. "Go, be with your son."
With that, the nurse holding my child ushered me towards the door, something I could barely accomplish with the panic almost paralyzing my entire being. Seconds felt like hours as I paced back and forth, the nurse tending to my son while every grave scenario I could imagine tortured the surface of my brain. When the doctor finally walked out of the room in which my beautiful wife had given birth to our son, the expression on her face told me everything. Her words sounded as though they were being spoken from the other side of a brick wall, as my senses betrayed me. With McPherson's permission, I approached Helen, who looked as though she was simply resting after the grueling night. I was all too familiar with how she looked when she was asleep. I can't even count the number of nights I drifted away, gazing at her gorgeous face as she softly stirred. I almost felt as though the rivers of tears I spilled upon her bedside could have flooded the entire city. The burning in my chest assured me that my fractured heart may well lead me to the threshold of death's door beside her if I couldn't calm myself. Were it not for the last gift she gave to this world, our beautiful baby boy, I would have gladly accepted my life's premature end at that moment. Though the grief threatened to shatter me completely, I could not allow that to happen. Not only was I a father now, but a single parent. Those first few months were the worst. While Malcolm was quite the remarkable child, not so much as whimpering or crying the majority of the time, my heavy heart felt as though it was unlikely to ever recover from my loss. As time passed, each year forging new and wonderful memories with my son, the nights I would spend crying myself to sleep grew further and further apart. They never ceased completely, of course, There were always those certain days during which the melancholy was so overpowering that Malcolm was the only thing keeping me from falling over the edge. He was an incredible and fascinating young man, my son. He wasn't always one to show many emotions, even during those times I would tell him about his mother. He wasn't a blank slate or anything, but he wasn't one to throw fits or run around giggling either. As he grew, as his features began to take shape of the man he was to become, though, it became more evident to me that we may not indeed be related by blood. I don't mean to imply that my dear Helen had fooled around on me or anything. Even on those very rare occasions we may bicker over something trivial, I never questioned whether or not she was faithful to me. While I felt like others may wonder what this gorgeous woman saw in my idiotic face from time to time, I trusted her more than probably anyone I'd ever known. Still, even with the certainty that she had been with me and me alone over those years we spent together, I couldn't deny there didn't seem to be the slightest trace of me in our child. Of course, even if I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was not the true father, it wouldn't change how I felt about him, or his mother. When he began school, he proved to be quite brilliant. By the third grade, he was taking fifth grade classes, and by seventh grade, he was attending high school. Though I was just as astonished and proud as the teachers who practically revered him, this was just one more thing that fueled my suspicions. That this incredible child had not been put together by any ingredients I provided. Helen was popular in school, but neither of us was a stellar student, by a long shot. She came from a wealthy family, so she had little to worry about, one way or the other. When she went off to quite the prestigious university after high school, I ended up at a local community college. The degree I earned helped me find a decent enough job, but it was Helen's money that allowed me to devote most of my time to her son after she passed. I could see her in his eyes, his flawless skin, and even the way his cheeks would redden in the summer, but no matter how hard I tried, I could never locate the slightest hint of me in there. If nothing else, I hoped my guidance would prepare him to become the incredible man I knew he could be. For years, I had no doubt he would be nothing short of a gift to society. That was, of course, until the laughter began. It was not an especially large city we live in, not one of those rural, everyone-knows-everyone sort of small towns, but it's still rare for anything big to happen here. When Stuart Marshall leapt to his death from the roof of the high school, just about everyone heard about it before he was scraped off the sidewalk. It was the principal of the school who called me to let me know that something was wrong with Malcolm. I was in the car and on the way to the campus before he had a chance to explain what was going on. When I arrived at the gate to see the flickering lights of police cars, an ambulance, and a fire truck, I instantly feared the worst. My heart was jackhammering so loud, I just knew I would lose it before I could find a parking place, with the line of other cars with anxious parents trying to reach their children. I finally pulled off to the side of the road and ran through the gate, hoping I could regulate my heavy breathing before I hit the concrete. Everything was becoming a blur as I pushed closer to the varying hues strobing across the walls. But when I saw the crowd gathered beside the impenetrable wall of caution tape, I almost screamed out from the fear awakening within me. "Oh God, no," I whimpered when I saw the blood-soaked white sheet over the body. Certain it was my precious boy beneath it.
"Mr. Clark,"
I heard a call out from somewhere outside the thunderous pulse, beating against my eardrum. Fighting against my transfixed tunnel vision, I turned my head to see the tall man with a shaved head and dark beard waving at me. Recognizing this to be Walter Thompson, the man who had contacted me, my unfocused eyes finally fixed on the boy sitting alone on a bench, just a few feet behind where the pale-faced man gestured to me. "Oh, thank Christ," I said with a shaky sigh upon seeing my son sitting with his hands cupped around his face, sprinting towards where he sat. As my gaze met the strained and weary eyes of the middle-aged man in the pink polo shirt I neared, I could only imagine what he was feeling at the time. That was far from my concern, though. All I cared about was getting to the child who appeared to be shivering as he wept into his open palms. The principal attempted to say something as I flew past him, reaching out to my whimpering kid, but the moment I laid my hand on my son's shoulder, I almost gave in to my spinning head. He lifted his face from his hands to reveal wide and bloodshot eyes. His mouth contorted into a stretched smile. I could barely wrap my mind around his unnervingly high-pitched cackling, echoing across the campus. Tears streamed down his reddened cheeks, his shoulders bouncing wildly as he howled his shrill squeal. I turned my eyes back to the bald man when he dropped his heavy hand on my arm, almost startled by the gesture. His expression was as bewildered as mine, as my son continued to shriek his insane cackling until he was almost gasping for breath. "He saw it happen," the principal said, shaking his head. "Saw Jimmy at the pavement. He's been like this since." "Oh, God," I said, mostly to myself. "What was he doing out there? Why was he..." "His teacher said he was on a bathroom break. I can't say how he or Jimmy..." "This is awful. An awful, awful thing." The man looked as though he was about to break down himself, and I could only imagine what he was going through at the time. Of course, that didn't matter to me, as I attempted to rationalize my son's seemingly endless fit of near-maniacal laughter. I just sat down beside him, wrapping my arm around his shoulders and pulling him closer to me. Even when his head flopped against my arm, the mad chuckling did not dissipate. If anything, my efforts to compose him only fueled his condition, his tears leaking across my arm. When a duet of police officers walked up, both wearing befuddled expressions that mirrored my own as I gazed up at them, still holding our trembling son, they gave us the go-ahead to leave. With his current state, he was in no shape to answer any questions about what he had witnessed. From what the officer said, which would coincide with what security footage would later reveal, it was a cut-and-dry case. The boy who took his life that day, James Sheldon, otherwise known as Jimmy to most, had been up on that ledge for the better part of 20 minutes. Perhaps he wasn't fully intent on his decision at first, or he was simply awaiting an audience, but only moments after Malcolm walked out the front door, Jimmy jumped. The two apparently gazed up at one another for some time before the older boy threw himself to the concrete below. I can only imagine how witnessing such a thing can affect such a young mind, even a brilliant one. By the time we arrived back home, my son had calmed down considerably. While he wasn't exactly catatonic, he wasn't especially responsive either. I tried talking to him about everything, but he just shook his head, dismissing my attempts to reach him. When he asked if he could just go to his bedroom, I saw no reason not to allow him some peace. He assured me that he'd call out if we were needed, but claimed he just wanted to sleep. Given the events of the day, I couldn't deny that some rest may be the best thing for him. The next day, a grief counselor showed up at my door, but even she couldn't get much out of Malcolm. After a week or so, he seemed back to his old self, maintaining his lack of any desire to discuss the topic of the kid who leapt to his bitter end at school. I was still unsettled by the whole thing, but I couldn't exactly force him to talk about it. I tried, I can't deny that. But just approaching the subject caused him to tremble, so I backed off. I wish I could say that I knew how to deal with this, but I wouldn't push it any further. I only hoped he would talk about it when he was ready to. It was several months after those unnerving events when I found myself faced with a second manifestation of my son's bizarre condition, if that's what it could be called. Malcolm had fully resumed his regularly scheduled programming over that time, leading me to assume it was nothing more than his immature mind's way of handling such a tragedy, as the counselor suggested. He was still such a tiny little guy, regardless of his remarkably advanced intellect, so he was sitting comfortably in his booster seat in the back as we headed into town in search of some well-earned fast food. We had been joking back and forth most of the ride, well, as much as his dry sense of humor would permit, but I was one of the very few people who could convince him to act more like a kid than a short, grown man. As I turned the car onto the main strip, I noticed the strobing lights alongside where a pickup truck and crumpled station wagon had collided. Close your eyes, kiddo, I said, hoping to avoid the possibility of this sight flashing his mind back to that awful day. He didn't reply, but I glanced in the rearview mirror to see he had done as I had asked. Traffic was backed up quite a bit while an officer guided oncoming vehicles from two lanes to one, but things began to move more quickly after a few minutes. When I drew closer to the scene of the accident to see a bloodied man strapped to the gurney being pulled towards the ambulance, I glanced back to the mirror in hopes that my son still had his gaze averted. I felt my heart skip a beat or three when I saw his wide and unblinking eyes glaring through the window, glued to the grisly sight. "Don't look at it, Mal." My words froze on the tip of my tongue when that mumble of a giggle began. "No, no, no, no," I muttered under my breath. "Please, don't." Within seconds, that stuttered chuckle practically exploded into that same gut-wrenching cackle that almost paralyzed me back at his school. "Malcolm, stop!" I yelled, hoping to shock his attention back to me. It was of no use. His laughter only continued to grow in volume, practically deafening me as it echoed through the interior of my small sedan.
Did you see that?"
he shrieked, coughing from the force of his laughter.
"He's dead. Ain't no way he's not dead."
As soon as we were clear of the accident, I whipped the car into the nearest parking lot, one that was far less vacant than I hoped, given the circumstances. The second I parked, I got out, pulled the keys from the ignition, and climbed into the back seat beside my wailing son.
"It's okay, kiddo," I said, placing my hands on his shoulder. "It's just an accident. I'm sure he'll be all right."
"All right? The bastard's a goner, Dad. Dead man rolling,"
he shrieked between gasping chuckles.
"Dead man rolling."
"Stop it," I screamed out, shaking him by the arms. "Enough already." Though I caught myself before I shook him too aggressively.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Entirely feeling a lump in my throat from the sensation of jarring my beloved son, I knew I had to figure out a way to break him out of this state. Gasping for breath as my heart throbbed beneath my sternum, I cut my eyes all around my car and the surrounding area, hoping to God I could come up with something. The only thing I could come up with was to pound my fist against the window, hoping that the shock would grab his undivided attention. The combination of my heart thundering and the keychain looping around my finger caused the window to practically blow apart from my strike. While the impact and shattering of glass did succeed in catching his attention, silencing that insane cackling for a moment. When his eyes met the blood gushing from my knuckles, the laughter began again, transforming into something almost inhuman. It was a deep and guttural moaning sound, something I could barely believe he was capable of producing. When I looked through the now vacant window on the driver's side back door to see a young couple gazing at me, muttering back and forth with expressions lined with concern, I knew I had to get moving.
"Sorry," I called out,
waving the hand that was not dripping blood to the concrete as I climbed out of the back seat. Nothing to worry about. I hopped back into the driver's seat and tried to crank the car back up, but the engine only stuttered in response. This only seems to fuel the already agonized-sounding chuckles from the back seat. As I climbed back out to take a look in the engine, I noticed the woman talking on her phone, assuring me I had to get moving quickly before I found myself accused of some sort of abuse. I jiggled the battery cables, which took little effort given how violently my fingers were trembling, before climbing back into the driver's seat to give the key another turn. To my surprise, the engine was humming within seconds, but as I got back out to close the hood, I noticed something that I wouldn't fully register until later. The lamps surrounding the wide parking lots were blinking erratically. Wasting no more time, I sped back towards the highway, making sure to turn in the opposite direction to where the blue lights still flickered on the side of the road, begrudgingly taking the scenic routes back to my house. If nothing else, the extended return trip allowed Malcolm to calm down from his fit, bordering on sleep when I pulled into my driveway. As I carried him inside, I felt his head fall limp against my shoulder, the mumbling remnants of his laughter finally fading into silence. I lay him on his bed, covering his tiny body with his blanket, and just sat in the darkness of his room, watching him sleep for a time. That haunting, howling sound still reverberated within my fractured mind. How could something like that come out of my tiny, precious boy? I just couldn't fathom it, let alone accept what inspired such hysterics. After managing to calm my spasming flesh to the best of my ability, I headed to the bathroom to tend to my still oozing hand. I winced with every chunk of glass I pulled from the open wounds, spilling more crimson onto the porcelain with each one. While I was certain that at least a few of the jagged gashes would likely require stitches, I chose to just wrap it up to the best of my ability before checking on Malcolm again. He was still out, sleeping as soundly as if he'd had a busy day of playing out in the yard like the other kids in the neighborhood. With that, I thought it best to attend to my broken window, while assuring that every single shard that may have fallen to the floorboards was gone by the time he would take his spot in the back seat again. By the time the work was done and a tarp was secured to the door, I practically flew onto my couch, my senses drifting away before I knew it.
"I'm hungry,"
Malcolm said after successfully shaking me from my slumber.
"Yeah,"
I groggily replied, reaching up to tussle his shaggy dark hair.
"Me too."
After the pizza arrived, we sat in the living room, allowing Nickelodeon to provide the soundtrack to our otherwise silent meal. While he seemed far more relaxed by this point, sitting on the floor with a slice in hand, gazing at the carefree sponge walking across the street, I was far too tensed up to eat. I wasn't sure if I was more troubled by this most recent instance of his maniacal laughter upon seeing a grisly sight, or by the fact he now seemed completely indifferent about the whole thing. Nobody exactly wishes for anything to be troubling their child, but there should have been some sort of lingering after-effects of what had occurred only a few hours before, right? The following days went by fairly uneventfully. I was still troubled by Malcolm's bizarre behavior, but I managed to push it to the side for a time. It was only a couple of hours until his bedtime, one Friday night, that I came up with a ridiculous plan to test how severe the situation may be. I waited until he was already yawning some before enacting the plan as I envisioned it. I was never exactly a fan of pain, nor the sight of my own blood, but I had to see if he would be affected at the sight in the same manner that more devastating wounds would inspire. While my torn knuckles fueled his condition a few days before this, that wasn't what started it. I had to know how easily he could be set off, as much as I dreaded to find out. I made sure to have him assist me in throwing together some quick supper, as he often enjoyed being a part of such things. He laid out the bread while I fished out the cheese and sandwich meat from the refrigerator. As I began to slice through the brick of cheddar with the freshly sharpened steak knife of my choosing, I made certain that his eyes were on me as I carved into it. I'm normally zoned out during such tasks, mentally vacant while my muscle memory does the work for me, but not this time. I knew the wound would have to be deep enough to draw a sufficient amount of blood, but purposely keep my thumb in just the right place for the blade to catch it on its descent was not the easiest thing in the world. I closed my eyes as the tip dug into the meat beside my cuticle, quickening my slice as soon as it made contact. Shit! I yelled out, whipping my hand from the counter to make the accident appear more genuine. I momentarily felt my stomach lurch when I realized I had cut far deeper than intended, but the unblinking gaze of my son distracted me from it quickly. While his lower lip quivered, his mouth stretched to the sides, his wide eyes began to trickle ever so slightly. It was as though he were attempting to hold back the giggle that was desperate to escape, his whole body trembling as he stared at my oozing thumb.
"That's not the cheese, Dad,"
he whimpered, a high-pitched squeak of a laugh trailing after. I quickly snatched the towel from the handle of the stove, covering up my leaking flesh, hopeful to shield it from his view.
"That's not the cheese,"
he screamed, the floodgates of mad laughter bursting open. I threw my arms around him, trying as hard as I could to hold him still, his entire being trembling violently against me.
"That's not the cheese, you stupid son of a bitch,"
he howled in a barely recognizable voice, with his legs giving out beneath him. We both dropped to the floor as I attempted to rock him as I had when he was a baby. The shrill squeal and unbelievable volume of his wails were almost deafening as I held him tightly, but I wouldn't let go, even when my head began to pound from the vibration of his body and the unyielding howl. The fluorescent bulbs above our heads began to flicker as the streetlights had back at the parking lot. When the light from the living room followed suit, the bulb of a table lamp blowing apart, I almost thought someone was firing a gun into the house at first. For what felt like hours, I rocked back and forth, keeping my grip as tight as I could, praying to God for my errors to calm him down. By the time his ear-piercing wail gave way to a softer humming, yet still constant chuckle, the blinking lights regulated once more. I was aching from head to toe, inwardly beating myself up for coming up with this ridiculous experiment, but thankful Malcolm had finally simmered down. When the laughter finally faded away completely, my beloved son's head falling limp to my shoulder, I once more carried him to his bed. With him settled and covered up with his blanket, his eyes darting around beneath their lids, I walked back out into the hallway, dropping to my knees the second I shut his door. I could almost feel the madness taking hold of me as I sobbed upon the carpet, pressing my hands to my mouth to muffle the moans. While I feared this would be the outcome of my idiotic plan, I had desperately hoped it would go the other way. Over the following days, after a great deal of inner debate, I did some research on local child psychologists. Once I narrowed my search down to two names, I placed a call to each of them, just to get a read on which of them may have a better understanding of what was going on here. Dr. Melissa Haven, who worked out of an office only a 15-minute drive from the house, seemed to check all the right boxes. While she hadn't experienced anything quite like I described, she had that inviting way about her. There was something about her tone that just felt comfortable to talk to, while Dr. Reginald Hatcher, my second option, had a more condescending manner. Having made my choice, I had Malcolm lined up with an appointment the following Thursday. Haven was generally booked solid from what she said, and from further research I did after getting off the phone with her. But she, fortunately, had a few cancellations, clearing up her schedule a bit. Those first few meetings were hit or miss, but she assured me that it may take some time to figure out the best course of action. In some sessions, I would be allowed to accompany our son into her office, while in others, she would ask to be alone with him, especially after he grew more at ease with her. Surprisingly, he took to her quickly, which she rarely does with anyone. As his therapy continued, she would ask permission to expose him to certain violent imagery, to be able to see how this would affect him. While I was reluctant about this, I knew he could never get past it by attempting to shield him from any of it. As expected, that first attempt exposed the doctor to the full reality of our concerns. I could hear the echoing laughter from down the hall in the waiting area while the lights flickered overhead, but I knew this had to be done. While Haven was visibly shaken from the experience, ultimately resorting to asking permission to sedate my son, she came up with a few recommendations for some medication. Yes, the idea of having to feed my precious boy antipsychotics at such a young age was a more difficult pill for me to swallow than him. But I can't say the idea of this hadn't crossed my mind. It took some time to narrow down one that was partially effective, but to my surprise, it actually worked. Or so we thought, anyway. Though Seroquel, the medication that provided the most effective, would put Malcolm to sleep soon after ingesting it, the nighttime regimen went quite well for several months. Not only did he show little reaction to any further imagery he was exposed to for the sake of discovery, but he gradually began to show a far greater range of emotions than he had to date. I maintained his therapy, though his sessions were adjusted from weekly to monthly. Everything was looking up for the first time in years. Malcolm continued to excel at school, plus he began to make some friends with whom he would actually play outdoors, something he had never shown interest in before his treatment. Though I had sprouted many gray hairs over that more troubling time in my son's life, I finally grew comfortable with the fact that the dark days were in the past. Of course, it's often not until we let our guards slip that the rug is pulled from beneath us, toppling us back to the floor. Though his sessions grew further and further apart, I had grown as comfortable with Dr. Haven as my son had. At being at ease with him in her care, I would often take care of some other things during the hour or so he spent in her office. I would be sure to make it back in time to be there when he got out, but sometimes I would end up just aimlessly strolling around some of the shops surrounding the complex. I picked up a few things at a nearby toy store for Malcolm before making my way back to Haven's office a couple of weeks back. Though he had a near dizzying intelligence to my far more simple mind, he loved Legos. Couldn't get enough of them. His room had just as many sets built and sat on his shelves as the books he would read. I would often grab something to reward him for his good behavior at the dentists and doctors, checkups and cleanings and the like, so I couldn't resist giving him something for all the work he'd been putting in during his therapy sessions. The smile on my face as I returned to the office to pick him up practically fell to the floor when my eyes met the receptionist, whose head was slumped on her desk, blood trailing from the gaping hole in her forehead. The flickering lights and muffled ambient chuckles inspired me to fear that my son's condition had not only gotten worse, but had reached a far more disturbing level. The boxes I carried dropped to the carpet as I sprinted back to the office where I prayed to God my son was all right, even with the sound of that horrendous laughter assuring me that he was alive and well. I was terrified of what I might find when I reached that door. I weaved around more bodies sprawled on the floor of the hallway, holding my breath in an attempt to keep the sickening sight of their torn flesh from sending me to my knees. When I pushed through the cracked, opened entrance to Dr. Haven's office, I finally lost my fight to remain on my feet. The vacant and horrified expression etched into the face of my son's therapist. The shredded flesh of her neck spilled crimson gore to her desk. The wide-eyed and gaping mouth of Malcolm gasping for breath as he howled his laughter. All of this struck me at once, turning my legs into quivering, wet noodles. When the initial shock released me, allowing me to crawl to my hysterical boy.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
I wouldn't allow myself to believe that he may somehow be responsible for this. That my brilliant child could have hurt all of these people. My thoughts were erratic, barely able to wrap around what I was seeing. But it wasn't until I embraced the tiny frame of my violently shivering son that the room's other occupant revealed himself. He doesn't belong with you. The graveled and emotionless voice said from the shadows. He never did. When I spun to face the direction from which the man spoke, still keeping my arms locked around Malcolm, I instantly recognized the blood-soaked, rotund man. He had a round face, curly hair, and a long beard, both lined with so much gore, I couldn't make out the exact shade. Though I had only seen his face on the website and heard his voice on the phone, I knew this to be Dr. Reginald Thatcher. It wasn't as much the sticky crimson covering his sweater vest and shirt that grabbed my attention, but those large and hauntingly dark eyes. Though I hadn't paid that much attention to the picture on his website, I could swear they were far lighter than those blackened, shimmering pools that glared back at me.
"You only have yourself to blame for this," he said with a shrug, leaning forward in the chair. "If you brought him to me in the first place, I wouldn't have been forced to seek him out."
My tongue was frozen. My vocal cords refused to do their job as my boy still howled his mad laughter.
"This would have been a lot simpler if you'd stayed away another 10 minutes. Maybe if it wasn't for the limitations of this,"
he said, gesturing to his body.
"I wouldn't have had to rest a bit. No matter though, he's still coming with me, one way or another."
"No," I said, shaking my head from side to side. Given the body counts, I had little doubt I could not survive against this man, but I would be damned if I was about to hand over my son. I couldn't imagine why he would go to such lengths to kidnap Malcolm, not even getting into how. His reasons didn't matter to me, only the safety of my boy, whether I made it out of this or not. "You have to run, Malcolm," I whispered into his ear, hoping he could hear me through his cackles. "You have to run out that door, and don't stop until you find help." While my son seemed to barely register my words through his endless fit, the creaking of the chair from the other side of the room inspired me to practically scream the words, "Run, Malcolm!" He still couldn't hear me, or wouldn't. As the bulky man, still dripping blood to the carpet, drew closer, I pulled my boy from the floor, sprinting to the door. How the borderline obese man moved so quickly, turning to a blur before my eyes, before blocking the path ahead and slamming the door shut, I couldn't know. But his sinister grin assured me that my time was running short.
"That's not his name, you know,"
he said, staring down at me as I pushed myself in front of my son.
"It's close, but not quite. Ain't that right, Malcolm?"
Malcolm's laughter died down considerably when he spoke the name that so closely resembled the one his mother gave him. It didn't dissipate entirely, but the volume lessened a good deal.
"That's right,"
the man said, crouching down to glare directly into the eyes peering around my waist.
"You belong with me, kid. With your real daddy."
As he moved in, my instincts took over, my tightly balled fist meeting his jaw as he reached for my son. When the thick blood gushed from his mouth, the somber chuckles behind me once more elevated to that ear-piercing wail. Over and over, I struck the face of the man who joined Malcolm in his laughter, more and more with every strike.
When the strength behind my blows began to weaken, it didn't take much for the man to push me to the floor, rising to his feet again and looking down on me with contempt. "That's all you got," he sneered, his chuckles fading. "You're pathetic. You have the nerve to think you have what it takes to raise him." When the sounds of approaching sirens rang through the office, I could only hope I could stall the inevitable long enough. As that sinister smile reached across Thatcher's lips, that brief moment of hope left the building. "No more time for games," he said, splaying open the fingers of his right hand. "Gotta make this quick." When the nails extended from his fingertips, accompanied by a grotesque, meaty sound, even the tires screeching to a halt outside gave me no hope of survival. As he raised his hand, preparing to put my life to a grisly end, two things happened at once. I closed my eyes, whispering a silent prayer that the police would at least be able to save my kid, while the sound of his maniacal laughter came to a swift and sudden stop. As my eyelids blinked back open to see those clawed fingers tearing through the air toward me, Malcolm suddenly moved between me and the blood-soaked man. Before I could force any sort of protest from my mouth, my son clapped his hands together, inspiring my attacker to appear to freeze where he stood. "No," Malcolm said, in barely more than a whisper, before thrusting his open palm into the man's chest, sending him crashing through the door, with shrapnels of wooden debris chasing after him as he soared through the air. As my boy turns to face me, his rosy cheeks still lined with the tears of his mad laughter, we both just glared at one another. I think we were both shocked by these events, but when that gentle smile returned, I just threw my arms around him, pulling him close and swearing I'd never let go. Most of the following hours were a blur, as police pulled us from the building, barking just as many demands as questions. It didn't take long for them to understand that we were innocent in all of the bloodshed, though the security camera footage experienced some technical difficulties throughout. That was more than enough to assure them that Dr. Reginald Thatcher was responsible for the brutal murders, but there was no trace of the man. While I was nervous about where the madman could have fled to, I was more grateful that the camera footage had not been able to capture what sent him flying across the hallway after demolishing the door. With blankets draped across the shoulders of me and my son, we sat on the curb next to one of the ambulances, awaiting permission to head home. Malcolm was playing one of his games on my phone, while I watched a tall, muscled man in a white t-shirt and jeans walking alongside a suited individual toward us. While his clothing was quite the contrast from the sea of uniforms and other men in suits, the way he greeted those he passed by assured me that he was just a more casual investigator. "Hi," he said, holding his hand out. "Would you mind if my partner here takes a look at your son?" I just tilted my head, studying the duo before me. "We just want to make sure he hasn't been hurt in any way," he said, gesturing to the ambulance we sat beside. "We won't take him out of your sight, I promise." With my nod, the thinner of the men picked Malcolm up. My son gave him a strange look, followed by a smile, assuring me that I had nothing to worry about. With all of the officials coming and going around here, I knew I was being a bit paranoid, but it felt justified given the circumstances. The man in the suit lifted Malcolm into the ambulance and began to check him out for injuries and the like. While I kept the two fixed in my periphery, the bulky guy began to speak again. "I owe you an apology," he said, glancing at his partner and back to me.
"What? For what?" I asked.
"This case is connected to one that's been ongoing for quite a while now, but I'm still, well, I'm fairly new to the job."
"So what, you've been investigating Thatcher?"
"Not exactly," he said, glancing back to his associate, who gave him a nod in return. "How much are you prepared to learn about this case?"
"Whatever it takes to keep my son safe," I said without a second thought.
"While there are some things I can't tell you, I have rules, you understand," he said, giving a strange look to his associate.
There are things I feel you have the right to know. Some of it may be tough to hear, but if you're...
I am, I said, far more enthusiastically than I intended.
To this day, I still have a hard time believing a lot of what he said, but there was something about the man that made me trust him. I can't say it was the way he spoke, the sincerity in his face, or just that I could tell that his eyes had seen some painful times. Whatever the case, it would seem that this was all part of a bigger puzzle. Some time back, a building fell. An ancient prison of sorts, which housed many innocent people. Before the foundation crumbled, they were all set free. Unfortunately for every innocent, there is someone, well, not so much. Equally as many of whom also found themselves held captive by this place. An entity named Moloch was among those who was set free, a sinister creature hell-bent on reuniting some of his old crew. Though many of them died while he was locked away, there are often ways to reverse such things. It was at this point that I began to wonder if these two were just some nutjobs who wandered up to see the pretty blue lights. Normally, if someone were to bring up such terms as entity or so casually mention the idea of undoing death, I'd be looking for the best excuse to get as far away from them as I could. This was not the case here. While the front of my mind was not prepared to even entertain any of this madness, everything else within me begged to hear more. Yes, what he said was crazy, unbelievable, even. But that's the thing. Somewhere in the back of my mind that I wouldn't fully register until some time later, I believed every word he spoke. Your wife, Helen, she was attacked, violated, and left with many scars. The one who did this was not the man who was locked up for the crime, nor is Reginald Thatcher responsible for these brutal murders today. This was supposed to be the climax of a plan he set in motion all those years ago. Those symbols he carved into your wife-to-be were part of a summoning ritual, one designed to bring his most trusted colleague back from the other side. The next step would require her to become pregnant, accumulating in her sacrifice when the baby was brought into this world. My words were frozen in my throat, my arms and legs trembling from this barely believable tale. Though I couldn't speak if I wanted to at the time, so many questions were invading my thoughts. Why us? Why her? Sacrifice? Her death wasn't natural. I needed to know. The more he spoke, the more I needed to know. Thatcher and Peck were not the only ones that Moloch borrowed to carry out his plan. Dr. McPherson was necessary to enact that final piece of the puzzle to bring his friend back from the darkness, latching onto your newborn son like a parasite. When I heard my son moan, almost painfully, I whipped my head to the side to see the slender man in the suit holding a glowing palm against Malcolm's chest. As I went to pull myself into the ambulance and wrestle the guy away from my boy, the bulky man laid a hand on my shoulder, steadily and instantly calming my racing pulse. Let him finish. If this works out how we hope, you two will be free of Moloch completely. As I stepped back down, staring back at the kind face of the stranger in the white t-shirt, one more question occurred to me.
Why didn't he just take me? I mean, if this Moloch can just leap into any old asshole, why go to these lengths? Why not just take me and be done with it?
He seems to study me for a moment, rubbing his hand across the stubble of his chin. With another glance into the ambulance, a smile and a nod from his associate, he began to speak again. Possession is not unlike hypnosis. Not everyone's susceptible to it. That being said, and I'm no expert on this by any means, but if I were to guess, I don't think he could take you, given the nature of the ritual. You being the father of the boy who was to be the vessel, well, there are rules, you see. Processes such as these, everything has to be done to the letter. One misstep and the whole thing falls apart. It's just a theory, of course, but it's likely one or the other. If you are one of those lucky enough to be immune to possession, or that it just simply could not be allowed, I can't say. Some of these entities enjoy the bloodshed enough that it could very well be that he enjoyed toying with you just as much as what he did in that office. After a little more back and forth, his partner rejoined us, my yawning son wrapping his arms around my waist.
The two before me shared a strange look at one another, the one in the suit giving another nod with a strangely mischievous half-smile. "Your son's gonna be all right," the big guy said. His partner nodded along. "I can assure you that you two need not fret this anymore. We'll keep an eye on things from here on out. Should Malog be inspired to seek you out again for one reason or another, he won't get within a mile of you and your son." Again, I just nodded along, somewhat mentally checked out.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Still, his assurance that we would be safe did set my mind at ease. "Once more, I am truly sorry that things got so out of hand," the man said, as his partner walked back to the crowd of police. "I've only recently earned this promotion, I suppose. But rest assured, you are protected. You two can head home now. Things will be back to normal before you know it." With that, he shook my hand again, gave a wink to my son, who giggled contently, and turned to rejoin his well-dressed associate. "Wait," I called out as he began to walk away. "Who are you? How can I reach you?" "I'm Michael," he said, glancing over his shoulder, waving a hand back at me. "If you need me, I'll be around." No last name, no officer or detective, Michael. Just Michael. With that, he strolled up to his friend with a ponytail and fancy suit, and they walked into the crowd and out of sight. Nobody else on the scene so much as acknowledged us as we headed to the car, my son gripping my hands tightly. When we got home, after picking up some drive-through on the way, we both passed out on the couch, soon after filling our grumbling bellies. It's only been some weeks since that awful night, but things seem to have gotten back to something resembling normal. Whatever it was, be it the events that left us both shaken, or whatever happened in the back of that ambulance, Malcolm hasn't had a fit of laughter since then. We've passed by the aftermath of another car accident, I've received a cut or two, and we've even watched a few scary movies together, just to test the waters. Nothing seems to be inspiring those fits anymore. If anything, my son tends to shield his eyes from the gory stuff in the movies, tucking his face into my shoulder as we watch. He enjoys them, but he's not a fan of the sight of blood. Not anymore. He has gotten pretty good at slapping a band-aid on me in a hurry whenever my clumsy fingers betray me. While that aspect of things is fantastic, his studies have been slipping of late. He still has quite an impressive intellect, but he's losing interest in school quickly. That's kids for you, though. I still keep my guard up, even with the mysterious Michael having assured me that we have no reason for concern. It takes a lot more than some friendly encouragement to make a partner feel better about things. What's odd is that I can't even seem to recall what the two investigators even looked like. I remember that one was big and the other was thinner. One had long hair, the other had shaggy hair. One wore a three-piece suit and the other jeans and a t-shirt. But anything else is a blur. I suppose it's just the trauma of that bizarre day, all things considered. I couldn't even tell you how many different cops I gave a statement to, let alone the less official-looking guys at the end. When all is said and done, the only thing that matters to me is that my son is safe and well. It's incredible how much that day changed him, every bit of it for the better. He laughs and jokes a lot, but only in a way that makes me chuckle along with him. He plays with friends and enjoys video games more than math. Now that's my kid for damn sure. Though I had begun to doubt he was mine not long ago, Malcolm is growing more like me every day. I just hope that's a good thing. I don't know if whatever allowed him to launch my attacker through a door and down a hallway is still inside him somewhere, but only time will tell, I suppose. The two investigators seemed quite certain that any lingering parasite was gone, but you never can tell. The future is unpredictable, after all. Now that the crazy times may finally be behind us, maybe it's time for me to rejoin the world, as my son has. I'll never forget my beautiful Helen, but if Malcolm has taught me anything, it's like I had no idea what love truly is until I looked into the face of one who wanted to take my son from me. As much as it still hurts to think about the life we could have had, I know now that I couldn't live without my kid. I simply wouldn't want to survive without him. For that reason alone, with or without our supposed guardian investigators, I pity anyone who ever threatens Malcolm again. There's nothing I wouldn't do to protect him.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.